Hello everyone, my name is Eli. Today we mess with the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I was out the 12th Hour in the Irving, Texas. Today is July 25, 2023, or it is the 8th day of Abe, 2027. We're going to start our second service, Breath in the Soul by Elijah David. Song that I've written February 26, 2006. I used to like the things that tempted me, just like the world thought it would be. A little okay if I sample this part of blues. But just like sinning, that's what it is. Started out with the little fizz and ended up with bills long overdue. After I thought I'd had enough of sampling all that wonderful stuff, I went to the yard and threw in the towel. He asked me what changed my mind. A little too much of that red wine, and besides that, feel it gets me wet to brown. Well, the word of the hour is breath and the soul, something that I'll never let go, something that means more than tongue can tell. Rising up early, going to bed late in the quiet hours, I meditate, and then I fall asleep, for all is well. I used to like the things that appealed to me, just like feathers I couldn't see. Feathers take the hours worth to save my soul. Then one day, opened his book, something that I longed for so, something that I had never known. The end that I discovered as I began to read, I soon discovered I had a great need to be baptized in the likeness of his death. I long for the day to be like him, to be free from sin and whole again. I close my eyes and sleep rest. Being born of the Spirit and washed in the blood, punching at y'all like nothing else does, fills you with His love now and eternally. So take hope, brother, and don't you let go. I wrap His love all around your soul, putting it on display for all the world you see. Word of the hour is breath in the soul, something that I never let go, something that needs more than tongue can tell. Rising up early, going to bed late, in the quiet hours I meditate, and I fall asleep for all is well, and then I fall asleep for all is well.
Part 2 of the coming of Elijah is taken from General Conference Special 1950 by B.P. Hollis. And this is part 2. We're on page, we're going to start this service with a song, and then we're going to have a prayer, and then we're going to have a sermon. And title, Part 2, is coming of Elijah, General Conference Special number 50. 1950. We're going to do a little review. This says that on page 27, and the serpent, the devil, passed out of his mouth water as a flood, and converted multitude after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Did away with the hypocrites, doubters, and men followed, and the dragon was wroth with the woman, the church, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, with those that escaped. Of her seed, those that are fully or truly her children, which keep the commandments of the Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua, Messiah. Revelation 12:15-17. In other words, those that keep all the sanctuary services of the feast days and are purified by sanctifying themselves through obedience to all the statutes of the sanctuary. Thus, both scriptures and logic makes clear that these escaped and separated ones are the remnant people of the Yahweh. In fact, once the church is purified, the sin is removed from her midst, then the call made by the remnant for the Yahweh's people to come out of Babylon goes forth in a very loud voice. And I heard another voice from the heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plague. Revelation 18:4. These called out ones are, as the scriptures make clear, beckon unto a place, Ezekiel 36:24, Isaiah 66:20, where there is no sin, Isaiah 35:8, Isaiah 52:1, Isaiah 62:12, and no fear of the plagues falling upon them, Isaiah 4:5-6, Isaiah 32:17-20, Psalm 91:10. That is, they are gathered into the purified church of Yahweh, the kingdom of the first fruits of the 144,000, the first fruits harvest of the Adventist church, with the Yahshua standing on the Mount Zion with the Lamb, in Revelation 14:1-5, and the antithetical David there with him in his kingdom. For this latter separation, the one that takes place and the Babylon's dominion is further affirmed in the Yahshua's parable, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divided his sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Matthew 25:32-33, which takes place in the house of the Yahweh. It is set forth in both the prophecy of Ezekiel and that of the Isaiah. For the Ezekiel declares, and the Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sign that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And he And unto the others he said in mine hearing, go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have you pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house, Ezekiel 9:4-6. As for the Isaiah declares, for behold, the Yahshua will come with the fire and with the chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with the fury and his rebuke with the flames of the fire. For by the fire and by his sword will the Yahshua plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahshua shall be avenged. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, unto Tarsus, full of blood, that draw the bow unto Tubal, and Avan, unto the isle of the far off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory. And they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto to Yahshua out of all nations upon horses and in chariots and in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts unto my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith Yahshua, as the children of Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel unto the house of Yahshua. Isaiah 6:16-20. No one but a hopeless citizen, one who forever holds on to his day dreaming that he has need of the nothing, more or no more truth or prophets, and fail to see that the prophecies pertaining unto the day of the Yahweh are only dark sentences to him. That's the day of the Yahshua, that's the Son. Are only dark sentences unto him, that he is in need of everything instead of nothing, and that the work of the promise Elijah is not the work which the lead of sins are doing. For the lead of sin message, the judgment for the dead, is definitely not the Elijah's message, although many may think it is, that many are blind unto this. For the Yahweh points out, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with gifts. Or the Yahshua is actually saying this in Revelation 3:14. That the Yahshua points out, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with the goods and have need of the leaven, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Moreover, we all know that the work of the typical Elijah was to do away with the prophets and priests who served Baal instead of Yahweh, those who led ancient Israel. Okay, it says, into the greatest fallacy and folly of the day. Accordingly, the antitypical Elijah's work being in the spirit and power of the typical Elijah must therefore be similar unto the typical Elijah's work, restoring truth and righteousness and bringing judgment upon the false prophets and teachers in the antitypical day, which in itself is the separating of the chaff from the wheat, the work of the judgment for the living. Did you know this has actually already happened, starting with the ancient and for the house, Brother Johnson, at Kermit Texas Gilead Center, 2002, starting at the Passover. Elijah David brought him the message that year for the Passover 2003, telling him that I had a message from heaven, and that there's going to be a separation, there's going to be a change of the guard this year, 2003, and I gave him a message from heaven that he rejected. And so I was playing the role of the untypical Elijah at that time. For the substantial weight of the evidence which the scriptures on the subject have amassed, and to this point has, I am again confident, impressed the discerning one that he is here face to face with the Yahweh's solemn truth for these closing hours of the probationary time. All such who have unbiasedly thought their way through the subject this far will surely continue on now through the next part to prove all things and to hold fast that which is good. Now the question is, the ancient prophet Elijah himself to reappear? That's it. The question is the ancient prophet Elijah himself to reappear, or is some other having the same spirit and power to take his place? For John the Baptist's statement that he himself was not the Elijah, and Yahshua stated that John was the Elijah of that day, not of our day, proves 3 points. Number one, that John was not in any sense of the word fulfilling the mission of the Elijah who is to come before the great and dreadful day of the Yeshua, but that he, the last prophet in the church of the day, simply came and the spirit and power of the Elijah was obtained as the way for the Yeshua's first advent. So it is that the Elijah of the great and dreadful day, which is us today, of Yeshua, the last prophet to the church of this day, comes in the same spirit and power to prepare the way for the Yeshua's second coming. Let's read that last sentence again. To prepare the way for the Yeshua's second advent. Number two, that is, John was the Elijah of his day, yet not Elijah the Tishbite himself, then the promise of the prophet Elijah is not necessary to be fulfilled in the person by the ancient prophet himself. Okay, it says number three, that as the Elijah of the Yeshua's first advent was one person, and also as the Elijah of the Mount Carmel of old was one person, not a multitude of priests, then by the imperative reason, the Elijah of today must also be one person, not a multitude of the ministry. For the promise itself, moreover, is for only one, not for more, and with but one exception, we know not of any other time when Yahweh employed even two prophets, let alone many, at one point, and that one himself, with the direction of the Spirit, employed others to help him take his message unto the people. Thus only were any others ever identified with a called one. What a blasphemous theft should one endeavor to steal away the truth about the prophet's office, to pass on a lie instead, to say that the Elijah is not an individual, but a group of people, in the face of the fact that the types and the prophecy, as well besides heaven's law and orders, disallow such a thing. Thus, to go contrary unto the Holy Writ is an outright effort to do away forever with the promised prophet of the Yahweh, as the Pharaoh endeavored to do away with Moses by the drowning the male Hebrew children, and likewise as Herod tried to do away with the Yeshua by slaying the little children of his day. What a wickedness indeed. Think this through too, brethren. Again, if anyone should possibly entertain the idea that this promise of a prophet means a multitude of the preachers, then as surely as your soul lives, that one is fooling himself as badly as those misled followers of the Core, Dathan, and Abiram fool themselves and their presumptuous thinking that those three prophetic office seekers and self-promoters were also prophets, as was Moses. Those three impostors, be it not forgotten, even claimed that the whole multitude were holy, Numbers 16:1-3. But were they? And as surely as the earth swallowed them then, just so surely will all such in these days too be swallowed by the earth when it opens its mouth and takes away the flood, Revelation 12:16. That is, those who would believe a lie and thus play the fool will do so. Nothing will stop them. It is to be devoutly hoped, though, brethren, that you are the followers of the Yahweh and of His Spirit in the truth, that you are not followers of the men or of the self, for the gravity of the issue challenges all unto the most honest thought and courageous decision. We should now, therefore, the more earnestly proceed with these concluding considerations, since Yahweh is not experimenting, and since He means just what He says, there should be no doubt in your mind that the scriptures concerning the antitypical Elijah, the one who is to awaken the Seventh-day Adventist Church and to warn the latter sins of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, make sure that he is one person. Of a surety, he is to have faithful helpers, but according to the prophet Nahum, he will greatly make use of the printing press and will scatter his message by the postage stamp everywhere as the leaves of autumn. He will not care what is done with his publication, but will make sure that they find their way into all hands, laps, pockets, yards, or wastes, passes throughout Laodicea. Here is what inspiration itself has to say concerning the prophet's means of taking his message unto the church. Behold, upon the mountains, the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace, O Judah, keep thy solemn peace, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no longer pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. Nahum 1:15. Thus you have it from the Yahshua, through his prophet Nahum, that know that the one who announces that the time has come for the wicked to be cut off from among Yahweh's people, and that the judgment for the living, which as we have already seen, is the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, is about to take place, is to make the announcement of these events by his publication. Further, concerning this timely truth, this meeting of due season, Isaiah declares that it will be dispensed unto all without having to pay for it, without money and without price. For he urges them, moreover, to stop wasting their money in the purchasing that which is not bread, Isaiah 55:1-2, that which is not inspired of the other. Okay, what is the Yahshua's counsel concerning the voice of the Elijah's publication, and what is the title of them? The answer comes to the Micah the prophet. For Yahshua's voice crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name, hear you the rod, and who hath appointed it? Micah 6:9. Here is a rod which speaks, and its voice, the scriptures appoints out, is the voice of the Yahweh unto his people. The voice of the Yahshua unto his people. And since the shepherd's rod is the publication which contains the message of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, is the only rod that has ever spoken, then it is the rod's publications which the Yahshua demands all to hear. Some may call the publications offshoot, others may call them rubbish. Council on Sabbath School, Work 29. But the Yahshua titles them the rod. And his counsel is that we read, we hear his voice. And the truth, since the rod is a symbol of the authority, correction, and deliverance, then what other tower could more fittingly signify that it is to deliver the repentant and to do away with the impenitent? It was the shepherd's rod that freed ancient Israel, and Yahshua has chosen the shepherd's rod to deliver modern Israel. It was a rod that led the first Exodus, and it is now seen that a rod is making ready to lead the second Exodus, Isaiah 11:11, Micah 7:14, 15, and Ezekiel 20, verse 36 and 37. Now that we have heard what the scripture says on the subject, let us next hear what the founders of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination had to say in their day. But was the prophecy wholly fulfilled in John the Baptist? We answer no, for it is more intimately connected with the great day of the Yahshua than was the mission of John. His work had exclusive references unto the first advent, but the prophecy must relate more especially unto the second advent, which is the crowning event of the ushering in of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, the year held February 23rd, 1864. They say that, do you say the prophecy must be fulfilled by one person? We answer, not necessarily. For the cause of John was shown us that it is not the individual but the spirit and power that fulfills the prophecy. And why may not this spirit and power accompany a body of men as well as a single individual, especially if the magnitude and importance of the work demands such an increased agency? If you inhale February 23rd, 1864. We say then that we believe that the third angel's message is now completing the fulfillment of the Malachi 4, 5, and 6. Hence let none be misguiled or be beguiled with the fancy that Elijah is yet personally to appear, but give heed unto the work already going on before their eyes. If you inhale February 23rd, 1864. For the founders of the denomination are here seen unquestionably to discredit the idea of the ancient prophet's personal reappearance. Moreover, these passages say that though the prophecy itself does demand an individual prophet, it does not restrict the work to an individual, but to a group, to a body of helpers directed by the Yahweh and endowed with the spirit and power of the Elijah. These questions are further elucidated by the early writers. I then saw the third angel, said my accompanying angel, fearful is his work, awful is his mission. He is the angel that is to select the wheat from the tares and seal or bind the wheat for the heavenly garner. These things should engross the whole mind, the whole attention. Early Romans 1:18. In this quotation, we are plainly told that the third angel's message in its final phase is the harvest, the judgment for the living. Again, the time of the judgment is a most solemn period when the seer gathers his own from among the tares. Testimonies to Ministers 2:34. For the third angel's message in its former phase, the judgment for the dead, was unfolded unto the denomination by the one person, the founder of the denomination, and that one directed other co-laborers, so must it be with respect unto the message in its latter phase, the judgment for the living. Moreover, since the first part of the third angel's message, the judgment for the dead, neither comprises the last, is his message, nor ends the judgment, but instead covers only the first phase of it, then the last part of the third angel's message, the judgment for the living, is necessarily the last message and the final phase of the judgment. In fact, the three angels' messages are applicable unto the judgment for the dead only. Indirectly, for the judgment for the living is the all-important event. That is, the angel is not sent particularly to explain what the judgment does to the dead, but what it is to do to the living. For the judgment for the dead, furthermore, is not the message of the great and dreadful day. It does not even touch on the prophecy of the great and dreadful day of the Yeshua. And since the one by whom the message of the judgment for the dead was unfolded has already been dead these many years, and since nothing, not to mention all things, have as yet been restored, and two, since that one never claimed to be the Elijah, nor to unfold the prophecies of the judgment for the living. No one, therefore, can honestly and innocently say Elijah has already come and gone. In view of these facts, it would be stupidity of the lowest form, if not blasphemy, for any one to lay such charges to her, or to imagine that her prophetic office fulfill anything more than a preparatory part of the mission of the Elijah. So we see that the more we consider the subject, the more obvious becomes the truth that the third angel's message in its final phase is the judgment for the living, the harvest. Plainly then, the work of Elijah is to give light on the judgment for the living. Hence, those who are to prepare the way for the second coming of Yahshua are represented by the faithful Elijah, as John 10, and the spirit and power for the preparing of the way for the Yahshua's first advent, Thessalonians, volume 3, page 62. Very obviously, the later sins cannot possibly prepare the way for the Yahshua's second advent without the message of the judgment for the living, the last, and besides, they themselves desire the Yahshua are on the verge of being spewed out. Necessarily, then, the later sins themselves are, if possible, to be awakened by the prophet Elijah. This, while dreaming of being rich without his message, they perish in their sin and thus abide not in the judgment. Here is Sister Ross' own prophecy of the work during the great and dreadful day, which, when she wrote, was yet future. For the closing words of the Malachi are a prophecy regarding the work that should be done preparatory for the first and the second advent of Yahshua, Southern Washington, March the 21st, 1905. Okay. This is for the work of John the Baptist and the work of those who in the last days go forth in the spirit and power of Elijah, for the rousing of the people from the apathy are in many respects the same. His work is a type of the work that must be done in this age, for Yahshua is to come the second time to judge the world and the righteousness. The messengers of Yahweh who bear the last message of the warning to be given unto the world are to prepare for the Yahshua's second advent, as John prepared the way for the first advent, Southern Washington, March 21st, 1905. In the hour of the great peril, the Yahweh of the Elijah will raise up human instrumentalities to bear a message that will not be silent. Prophets in Kings 1:87. Prophecy must be fulfilled. Let heaven judge. For Yahshua says, behold, I will send to Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of Elijah, and when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. Testimonies to Ministers, 475 and 76. Quote from the Review and Herald, February 1889. This is the greatest danger of all, even of the believers. Thus plain it is indeed that we have more to fear from within than from without. For the hindrances to strength and success are far greater from the church itself than from the world. Review and Herald, March the 22nd, 1887. To say the least, those who are within should know better than to tempt themselves to study the ark as though Yahweh had appointed him to take his place and to direct his prophet, coveting not only the prophetic office but Yahweh's authority as well. What an insult, not only unto one's own intelligence, but also under Yahweh himself. From the light now streaming forth on this subject, you can see, brethren, as never before, that we have come into a last most serious hour, a time in which we can no longer treat this matter lightly and indifferently, but in which we must ask Yahweh to lead us into His truth for this time, lest we blindly, without inspiration, walk on to doom. And the more earnestly still should this solemnity be laid to heart as one views these next weighty words to the church. In the last solemn work, few great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient and dependent on Yahweh, and He cannot use them. Yahshua has faithful servants who, in their shaking, testing time, will be disclosed unto view. Testimony, Volume 5, page 80. For the messages from the heaven are of a character for the arousing opposition. For the faithful witnesses, for the Yahshua and the truth, will reprove sin. Their words will be like a hammer to break the flinty heart, like a fire to consume the dross. There is the constant need of the earnest, decided messages of the warning. For Yahweh will have men who are true to duty at the right time. He sends His faithful messengers to do a work similar unto that of Elijah. Testimony, Volume 5, page 254. Only those who have withstood and overcome temptation in the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act as a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message, when it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Review and Herald, November 19, 1908. Brethren, what these pages here bring unto you to leave in your hearts for your most earnest prayerful consideration is not a theory, not someone's idle tale, but is of the inspiration itself, for it can only therefore be true. Consequently, your giving heed unto it should make you exceedingly happy. If there is, however, any doubt, then I ask you to please to produce your cause. Show us what else must these prophecies and parables mean. Do not brush them off by the saying, offshoot, or by the pinning on them some other uncomplimentary label. For the longer you do this, brethren, the more you will torment yourself. I implore you to write to the Universal Publishing Association, Mount Carmel Center, Waco, Texas, for the free literature on the message. For the hour and steady authority, get down to business and all tender and soft, solemn seriousness. You will not then be troubled with the offshoots any longer. So before you speak your mind, brethren, please consider carefully what timely truth will you have for yourself and for the world after judgment for the dead is over if you reject the revelation herein. And what will you have for anyone, including yourself, when the judgment for the living begins? What but an empty lamp, unless you now get the extra oil in your vessel. Unless, in other words, figures of the scroll unrolled and another divinely revealed truth meet in the due season, Matthew 24:45, is given you. And what will happen if you should copy the mistakes of the Jews, the Romans, and the Protestants, who have rejected the message of the Yahweh? For Yahweh forbid it be the fearful fate of any unto whom this appeal is addressed. Note, the above address has been changed to 282 Division Way, Tennessee, South Carolina. This is the end of General Conference Special 1950 by V.T. Hodder. What have we learned? We learned some things about the transfer, the judgment of the dead to the living, and efficiency. And anyway, this brings us to the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Blessed Redeemer. Up Calvary's mountain on dreadful morn, walk after my Savior, weary and worn, facing for sinners, death on the cross, that He might save them from endless long. Blessed Redeemer, precious Redeemer, since now I see them on Calvary's tree, wounded and bleeding, for sinners pleading, wanting and hating, dying for them. Father, forgive them, thus did He pray. Even while His life blood flowed fast away, praying for sinners all in this world, no one but Yahshua ever loved so. Blessed Redeemer, blessed Redeemer, since now I see Him on Calvary's tree, wounded and bleeding, for sinners pleading, wanting and heeding, dying for them. Oh, how I love Him, Savior and friend. How can my praises ever find Him? Weary is a number on heaven's shore. My tongue shall praise Him forevermore. Blessed Redeemer, precious Redeemer, since now I see Him on Calvary's tree, wounded and bleeding, for sinners pleading, one and unheeding, dying.